You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Thursday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday, postponed for a day because of me, not because of Wayne. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. Wayne, what do you do at this time of year? I mean, a lot of people have taken 2 weeks off because of the double public holiday, and a lot of corporates obviously don't release anything important during this time. What do you do? Do you do a Shapiro where you study income statements and balance sheets of companies and do lots and lots of reading, or do you just bury your head in a car?
No, I just work in a car.
There we go.
I am semi-retired, so I don't work a full week. So you could argue I'm half on holiday now.
Yeah.
So I don't have big holiday experiences, and I'm actually not a person for taking 3 weeks off. I like short little 2-3 day breaks often. So, I mean, literally once a month, we'll go for a 2-night, you know, obviously just local in South Africa.
Yes.
And I find that a lot more rewarding than 3 weeks somewhere. Because then if I spend too long with away, and I'm being dead honest, if I spend too long away from my garage, I start to get itchy feet. I want to get back and work on cars. So, yeah.
Okay, well, that's your hobby. That is your holiday. I mean, for you to do that's something that you enjoy. And also, and I don't want to be too personal here, would you get fed up with being with the world's greatest rugby fan constantly, every single day for 3 weeks? It's not that. Oh, good. I'm glad.
No. The world's greatest rugby fan is actually very interested in a lot of things. So whenever we go somewhere, we go touring.
Yes.
We go and see all the local attractions. We go and do all the local things. So when we do go touring, we're busy. We don't just sit around. Well, even when we go to Mauritius or a place like that, they've got activities on. So we've done painting and cooking courses and pottery courses, and we've gone to see the rum distillery, and we've gone. So the world's greatest is she likes activities. She doesn't like hanging. And that suits me. Because I also like activities.
Do you? Okay, I'm the opposite of that. Mm. I'm an inactive person, but that's what makes the world go round. And just finally, I just have to say, I can't imagine going away for 3 weeks. I'd be outside of my comfort zone for 3 weeks. People go on holiday for three weeks.
Too long.
It's too much, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, but I can remember my dad used to get his annual leave. Now, he worked for De Beers.
Yeah.
And one of the big perks of working for De Beers was you actually got very generous leave. I mean, I might be mistaken, but I can remember it was maybe even as much as 30 working days a year.
Gosh.
And he would accumulate the whole lot, and we would take it over December and January, and he would come home from work on his bicycle.
Mm.
He was a diamond sorter.
Yeah.
And their office uniform was a white safari suit. He used to come home in his white safari suit on his bicycle. The night before, we'd hitched up the caravan to the car. We packed the caravan. My mom would have the park course ready because there were no one stops in those days in the 60s.
Of course.
You took all your own food and cool drinks and coffee with you. Mm. She'd have it all ready. You'll park his bike in the back porch, lock the back porch, jump into the car in his white safari suit, and we were off on holiday. He didn't waste a single minute. And then if he was due back at work at 8 o'clock on Tuesday, the 10th of January, we would leave Cape Town or Durban, wherever we were. It was mainly Cape Town. We would leave Cape Town literally so that he would get into Kimberley an hour before he had to go to work.
Gosh,
so he was the guy for 6 weeks or seven, 5 or 6 weeks, every last minute. He wanted to be on holiday somewhere, and he could hang.
And what did little Wayne do during this? What did you do?
No, we went to the beach, my brother and I, and we went fishing. And, you know, we were little kiddies then, and you went exploring and played a bit of soccer or threw a tennis ball. It was quite fun, actually.
Very good. And just ask, before we get on to the main business of markets and other less important matters, Was he searched every day when he left De Beers because he was a diamond sorter? I mean, and were the searches quite intrusive?
They did. No, not at all. No. So what happened was they had a very sophisticated system where they would balance the number of carats in the building every day, carats of diamonds.
Yes.
They would balance it all. So they had a very sophisticated system, how many came in, how many came out, and then there were sealed boxes or ones that are not being sorted, and they were sealed with that good old-fashioned wax. Is it a wax seal?
Yes, exactly right. Yeah.
You know, that you melt. Yes. That you melt. So it's a little wire cord that went through this metal box with this wax seal on it with a special stamp on it, you know, that you used to have a stamp that you put in it. So then they would be about 15 minutes before they closed the building for the day. They would add up all the sealed containers. They would weigh all the diamonds on the desk that are busy being sorted that were loose. They would have the diamonds coming in and the diamonds coming out, and they knew what the theoretical total was. And, you know, obviously there might be some variation, you know. I mean, they had millions of carats there. So there might be, I don't know, 500 carats sort of tolerance, but they balanced the books every single day, and you didn't leave that building until the books balanced. And then if they couldn't balance the books, then they'll search you.
Okay, that's interesting.
But they also did things like they cancelled lunch hours. So you came to work, I think my dad started at 7:30, I think, and he would be home at 2:30 because you didn't have lunchtime, because they reckoned that the opportunity to steal diamonds out of the building, if people went in and out for lunch and, you know, in and out coming in and going home in the afternoon, would be double. Yes. So you just weren't allowed in and out of the building. You came in and you stayed there the whole day and you left, but they gave you a lunch and they gave you coffee and all of that stuff inside the building. And there was no, as far as I can recall, all the years that my dad worked there, there were no reports of diamonds being stolen from the sorting office. But, I mean, illegal diamond buying, IDB, was big in Kimberley in the 60s and 70s. There were a good few people that were arrested for illegal diamond buying because you couldn't own a rough stone unless you were licensed. And my dad's best friend at school, his great friend at school, owned the only steak restaurant in Kimberley called the Safari Steakhouse.
Yes.
And we could never go there because he was involved in illegal diamond buying. He went to jail, and he went to jail, but he was released, you know, while I was still a youngster. And we could never go to the Safari Steakhouse. And then one day for Pete Laverdes, which was the guy's name, for his birthday, he phoned my dad and said, "Keith, bring your whole family. It's my birthday. Come along." And my dad just thought, what the hell? He's going to go and see his old mate, Pete Laverdes, at the Safari Steakhouse, just above, on the second floor above the cafe, and opposite the Plaza Theater, Plaza Movie House. And we went there and we had a lovely steak. I remember so clearly because we'd never been there. I had a T-bone steak with chippies, and it was delicious. And the next day, my dad was called into his boss's office because they had spies, policemen, De Beers security, more correctly,
yes,
that kept an eye on all of these illegal diamond buyers, and they recognized my dad going in and out to the restaurant. And he was actually called into his boss's office and had to explain why he was having this meeting, this association with a known illegal diamond buyer.
That's very interesting, Wayne. And I just noticed, it sparked my memory. It was just a few days ago, three or four trading days ago, that Anglo American PLC came out with their latest rough diamond sales. And I remember when De Beers delisted from the JSE, as it was then, not the JSE Securities Exchange.
Yes.
And I know there was a lot of nostalgia around the fact that it was delisted.
Yes.
I think they probably did the right thing to amalgamate it into, you know, the Anglo American stable.
Yeah.
But when you first started in the business, it was a massive, massive mistake.
No, it was big. When I first started De Beers and Anglo American, and all the gold mines were separately listed.
Yes.
And so was AMIC, an Anglo American Industrial Corporation. So was Samanco. There were lots of them that were separately listed. And then, of course, all the diamond mines consolidated into Anglo Gold and Gold Fields and, JCI, etc.
Mm.
And then early in the 90s, De Beers and Anglo-American became linked. So even though De Beers and Anglo-American had separate listings, it was effectively one share. So it's a bit like Investec Limited and Investec PLC.
Yeah.
You know, they've got profit sharing agreements between the companies that they would always show the same earnings per share. And then eventually De Beers was consolidated into Anglo-American itself. But of course, the Botswana government owns a big share of De Beers as a separate entity. And then Anglo-American, I think, owns the majority of the shares. But Debswana owns a significant portion. And that's why they're busy trying to renegotiate the agreement as to what the exit price is of diamonds out of Botswana. And of course, the government wants more, but that's quite natural. And they've got a very similar arrangement in Namibia as well.
I think there was something quite controversial recently. The Botswana government invested something like 26, 27% in a company. I can't remember what the stories were.
It's a Belgian. I mean, I might be mistaken.
Yes,
but I think
Antwerp,
it's a Belgian or Dutch company.
Yes, an Antwerp dealer. That was it. Yeah.
Antwerp dealer, where they want to start marketing diamonds or something outside of the Beers organization. Because remember, not that long ago, it was a cartel. I mean, De Beers controlled the world's diamond. It was a cartel.
Yes.
And I can still remember my dad. He was once a year that De Beers directors would come down to De Beers' head office in Kimberley, in Stockdale Street. Very nice old building, beautiful building, actually. And they would have the annual general meeting of De Beers in Stockdale Street, purely nostalgic because De Beers wasn't run out of Stockdale Street in Kimberley. It was run in Johannesburg in Anglo-American. But once a year, they would come down. And then if you were invited to the tea, when the directors had their tea at 10 o'clock in the morning of the annual general meeting, then it was something really special. And my dad went once to the tea with the Anglo-American, with the De Beers directors. And he came back and he was telling the story of how they can't go into America. They can't travel in America as directors of De Beers because the anti-competition authorities would arrest them because it was a cartel.
Mm.
So it's like OPEC.
Yeah, but no one from OPEC gets arrested. They manage, that's the irony of it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just saying, Busby, that's the difference between diamonds and oil.
Mm. Everyone needs oil, no one needs diamonds.
You don't have to have diamonds.
No, but sometimes and you so do. They're a girl's best friend.
Everything.
Mm. And because you've got diamonds in your blood, and before we get on to the real matters, which we keep on avoiding, have you ever bought a diamond for the world's greatest rugby fan, your partner?
No, not for the world's greatest rugby fan. She's I'm most fortunate in that she's not into heavily materialistic things. She doesn't like expensive watches and jewelry and stuff and fancy clothes and fancy handbags. So we go shopping at Macro and Woolworths clothing and Pick and Pay clothing together.
How romantic. Okay, Wayne, let's have a look at what's been happening recently. And you're an inflation guru. 5% inflation was recorded last month in the United States of America, well below. I mean, it's sort of mid-range, isn't it? And I was surprised at the sort of sanguine nature of the market reaction to that figure.
Yes.
And I think to myself, well, does someone know something? Was this an aberration? Was this just a once-off? Do we need a sequence of lower inflation figures? What was your interpretation?
Look, it was slightly better than expected. There was the headline number came in 0.1% below expectations, and that's nothing really. It's on the right side of expectations, but the magnitude is nothing. There was one bit of negative news. The core inflation didn't fall as much as anticipated. But then the positive news was the month-on-month change was significantly lower than expectations and much lower than the February figure. The February figure was 0.4%. So if you annualize that, you get, you know, 4.8%. The month-to-month figure this time was 0.1%. So if you annualize that, you get 1.2% for a year. And so that was the positive and negative. So initially markets were up, including our market, and then it sort of like fizzled out yesterday. But today there's fairly good gains on the markets. And the rand's also strengthened from the 1840 last time I looked to the 1810, 1812. So maybe a bit of a delayed positive reaction today.
Oh, good. Long may that continue. Looking elsewhere, this is not really for you, but I noticed that UK growth came out at 0%. In other words, it's not growing at all. Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, managed to turn that into a positive and say, look, we're on the right trajectory now because we're not negative. But yet the IMF says that the UK is going to be the worst performing economy out of the G20 nations, which is a sad state of affairs. Yeah, that's what they say. And also go on.
They probably had the biggest inflation shock of the whole lot.
Yeah, 10.4% was the last print, yeah. I think it was. We're waiting for the new one. And 18% food, which is extraordinary. So anything, if you bought 100 rands worth of goods in the UK last year, you're paying 118 for it now. And for poor people, that's unsustainable. And we're not even talking about energy yet. But let's go on to the IMF. Because the IMF have said, it doesn't matter whether inflation is coming down, central banks must be vigilant and keep on tightening. And I found that, I don't know if that's a controversial statement, but maybe they know something we don't as well. I don't know whether the IMF is backward-looking or if it's got information that we don't know.
No. And this is a little bit philosophical, but it's something I believe firmly in. Nobody knows the future. So when you hear the IMF or some fancy economist or someone, they might have more experience, they might have more theoretical knowledge, but they've probably got almost as good a chance of guessing the future there as you and I do. You know, I've seen so many well-known people get it so right, and that's fantastic, but I've known so many well-known people and so many organizations and reputable global bodies get it wrong. So, yes, classic example, recent past. You know, 2 years ago when the Federal Reserve started talking, inflation was transitory. Eh?
Oh, goodness me, I remember that so well.
This is not, you know, Joe Citizen. Yeah, this is the Fed. They got it totally and utterly wrong along with everyone else. So, you know, whenever you see these forecasts and either very positive or doom and gloom and all of this, take it with a pinch of salt. They're trying to guess the future. They don't know the future any more than you and I know the future. So you must always, myself included, when I give predictions about the future, you know, you must take it with a pinch of salt because I don't know the future. You know, people often come up to me and say, Wayne, what's a hot stock tip so I can make money?
Yeah.
I said, listen, if I knew that with any great degree of certainty, I wouldn't be telling you. I would be cashing in on it myself. You know? So all forecasts about the future and what's going to happen is effectively guesswork. You know, some guys might be luckier than others and get it right more often. And believe me, in investments, there's an enormous amount of luck involved. And some people might just have a natural ability, a natural skill, an analytical mind, a good theory, good theoretical base, a great degree of intelligence, et cetera, that they might get it right more often than others. But if you're really good, I mean, if you're exceptionally good, you're only going to get about 60% of what you forecast right.
I've got to say in my favor.
That's exceptionally good.
In the last quarter of 2020, I'm looking at my screen and my Commodity Research Bureau screen and looking at every single commodity in the world. And I see them all going up. And then I hear Jay Powell, the chair of the US Federal Reserve, saying, no, this is just a transitory phase for inflation. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't get it. I don't agree with you. I think it's becoming entrenched. And of course, you know, in my simple way, I was absolutely right. I mean, I don't know how they got it so wrong. I don't know how, this phrase being behind the curve. This is their job. It's their daily job. It's ultimately,
Ultimately, everyone's essentially behind the curve in investments. Ultimately. I mean, you make some predictions about the future and you put some positions in your portfolio about the future and what's going to happen. But essentially, you influenced automatically, obviously, as the data comes out. So essentially, everyone in investments is behind the curve.
Okay. You're not doing yourself any favors here by saying this. You know,
no, but I'm totally honest. Yeah. I'm totally honest. I mean, when people often ask me, you know, you in investments, come and help me with this and help me with that. And, you know, obviously I do it to within the limits of my ability, but I always make it very known to them that I don't know the future at all. And a lot of our job, let's say, when I say our job, the investment job, the investment profession is holding clients' hands and helping them through the process and the uncertainty and of investments and the unreliability of forecasts and explaining good times and mostly bad times to them. So it's very much a client relationship type of job. I mean, probably half my job, and probably more than half my job, is talking on the radio, TV, talking to clients. Probably more than half my job is actually doing that. It's not actually investing.
Well, I suppose when you sign up with a large institution that you work for, you know, part of First Rand, they say to you, they say, well, this is part of your job. You've got to represent the company. I know lots of people are very reluctant when I phone them up and I say, well, your media person has just said that you're available for a talk at 2 in the afternoon. And you can almost hear them sigh and groan in agony because they don't want to do it.
I don't mind.
No, I know.
I don't mind. I quite like it, though.
Especially when you talk about food, because there's nothing to talk about on the JSC at the moment. Now, I did tell you about the lambs that are springing around and gambling around in the fields near where I live, and how I felt guilty because when I see a lamb, all I can think of is mint sauce. So I did buy the lamb shanks that I was rumored to do, and on Easter Sunday, I cooked them. So nice and slowly, with onions and garlic and rosemary and thyme and everything. And it was very, very slow cooked. I mean, although they were small, I cooked them for about 3 hours. And then just towards the end, the last hour, I opened a tin of Guinness and put the Guinness in.
Oh, Guinness is nice.
Yeah, it is. It's a fantastic stout. It's marvellous.
Fantastic beer.
Yeah, it is. Lovely. And I put it in there, and then I took the lid off the casserole dish and let it reduce into almost like a, not sticky, but not brothy sort of gravy. And then I did the three
delicious
different coloured carrots and parsnips on the side and everything, and I poured that Guinness sauce all over the shanks and everything. It was superb. How was your Easter food?
No. Look, I've got a friend here. He's the chap in the background making all the noise, packing up. Yeah,
I can hear that.
He's a very good. Comes from a good Catholic family. His dad was a lay preacher. Anglican family, not Catholic. He just reminded me.
Yeah,
his dad was a lay preacher. And before the Easter weekend, he says to me, oh, are you having lamb on Sunday? And I never realized that, certainly amongst the Anglicans, that lamb on Easter Sunday was the traditional dish. No, we didn't have lamb. We went to our normal Sunday spot and had a roast beef with Yorkshire pudding and crackling and roast potatoes and peas and carrots and cauliflower and cheese sauce, which was, as it is every Sunday, totally and utterly delicious. My dog was a little bit upset because they still haven't been able to source broccoli yet.
Oh, of course, yeah. But your dog likes a bowl of broccoli.
He had to make do with some cauliflower and cheese sauce, which he also likes. I mean, he likes most things, to be honest. He's a dog.
He's a McCurry. who likes most things. Okay, Wayne, well, that's great. Now, I've got to get off for another interview, but next week, hopefully, there'll be some more market news to get our teeth into.
Yes, yes, I hope so.
But meanwhile, have a great weekend, and we'll speak next week. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment, and that was Wayne on Wednesday on Thursday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.